Radio Prague News. The Czech Intelligence Service has said it is providing any information considered relevant to assist the investigation into the brutal bombing and shooting massacre in Norway. The Czech Labour and Social Affairs Ministry has said it will stop the practice of financially compensating Czech pensioners who worked in Slovakia before the 1993 breakup of the Federation. And the police were called to Šumava National Park on Monday following a confrontation between environmentalists and loggers over the cutting of bark beetle-infested trees in the area. The Czech Intelligence Service, BIS, has said it is assisting the investigation into the bombing and shooting massacre in Norway within its means by providing Norwegian colleagues with any information considered relevant. The anti-Islamic zealot who claimed responsibility for the attacks that killed 90 people wrote in his notorious internet manifesto that he had visited Prague in 2010 with the aim of illegally acquiring weapons as well as illicit drugs. According to his own words, he was unsuccessful and left empty-handed after 5 days. BIS spokesman Jan Schubert said on Monday that the Czech Intelligence Service was in touch with its Norwegian colleagues to answer questions and provide any information that could help with the case. Although the Czech authorities tightened security around key sites in the wake of the attacks, the special measures have now been called off. The Czech Labour and Social Affairs Ministry has said it will stop the practice of financially compensating Czech pensioners who worked for Slovak companies before the 1993 breakup of Czechoslovakia and would thus have been eligible for smaller pensions. The Czech state had been making up for the difference, topping up the pensions, until a European Court of Law pointed out that the practice was discriminatory against EU citizens who had worked for Czech companies and were now getting lower pensions in their home countries. The Czech Labour Ministry said it was not in a position to continue the compensations, since demands from foreign nationals who would be considered eligible could exceed 100 billion crowns annually, which the country was not in a position to cover. The police were called to Šumava National Park on Monday following a confrontation between environmental activists and loggers over the cutting of bark beetle-infested trees in the area. Following a week-long blockade of the protected area near Modrava by environmental activists, loggers arrived on Monday morning and started felling marked trees. The park's management called in the police, which forcibly evicted the protesters from the area on the grounds of a court order. The arrest of Goran Hadžić, the last major Serb war crimes fugitive, has removed the last serious obstacle on the road to Serbia's EU accession, Czech Foreign Minister Karel Schwarzenberg said following talks with his Serbian counterpart Vuk Jeremic in Prague on Monday. Foreign Minister Jeremic said Serbia would work hard to fulfil all the other requirements for EU accession and hoped that it would be officially recognised as a candidate country and start accession talks by the end of the year. The meeting of Czech and Serbian foreign ministers likewise focused on bilateral trade and emerging investment opportunities. And finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. The coming days should be partly cloudy to overcast with scattered showers and afternoon highs reaching 23 degrees Celsius. I'm Daniela Ozerova, and that's the end of the news.
Hello, you are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. My name is Sarah Borufka. Coming up in today's program, the Norwegian gunman suspected of killing 93 people on Friday visited Prague in search of weapons in 2010. We have all the latest sports news, and a little later in the program we talk to an Australian Shakespeare scholar who was recently in Prague at the 9th World Shakespeare Congress.
How can you keep studying the stuff that's been around for so long? You know, I think the answer is that we changed.
All that and more coming up, so do stay with us. Anders Behring Breivik, who admitted carrying out Friday's twin terror attacks in Norway that killed 93 people, visited the Czech capital last year in search of weapons. In a manifesto published on the day of the attacks, attributed to Mr. Breivik, the terror suspect wrote that his failure to do so in Prague led him to acquire a rifle and a handgun legally in his homeland. In the document, the 32-year-old right-wing anti-Islamist fundamentalist also quotes Czech President Václav Klaus' criticism of the EU. Jan Richter has more.
According to the manifesto entitled 2083 European Declaration of Independence, which has been attributed to Anders Behring Breivik, the Norwegian gunman drove to Prague from Norway in September 2010 to establish a weapons connection. Having seen an unspecified BBC documentary about Prague, Mr. Breivik believed the Czech capital was perhaps the most important transit point for illicit drugs and weapons in Europe, and thought he would be able to illegally buy an AK-47 assault rifle, a Glock handgun, grenades and ammunition. He was also concerned about his own safety while in Prague, where he expected a lot of brutal and cynical criminals. The Norwegian right-wing fundamentalist wrote that he spent 6 days in the Czech capital. He had several materials printed out professionally about mineral extraction he intended to use as a cover for illegally manufacturing explosives. He also got police ID badges and other insignia printed, and noted that in Norway the printing shop would notify the authorities of such a request. Mr. Breivik's plans, however, to acquire weapons in Prague failed. During his first 2 days in the city, he visited two brothels and some nightclubs looking for a criminal connection, but he came back empty-handed. The people I approached got really nervous and thought I was either a cop or completely nuts, he wrote in his manifesto. The failure made Mr. Breivik reconsider his plan for getting weapons. Instead, he decided to apply for a license for a hunting rifle and handgun legally in Norway. Despite his lack of success, Anders Behring Breivik did not cut his stay in Prague short. He wrote he felt safer than in Oslo, probably because there are basically no Muslims living in this country. He said the only criminals were Christian gypsies, who the government chased away from the capital. The Czech Republic is also mentioned on several occasions in those parts of the 1,500-page pamphlet that deal with ideological justification of the attacks. In a chapter entitled Why We Cannot Rely on Moderate Muslims, the author suggests West European countries could expel parts of their Muslim populations in the same way ethnic Germans were expelled from post-World War Czechoslovakia under the so-called Beneš decrees. The author also quotes Czech President Václav Klaus, among many other politicians, journalists, writers and others. The author highlights Mr. Klaus's criticism of the EU from the 1990s, when the then Czech Prime Minister allegedly said, "Every time I try to remove some piece of Soviet-era regulation, I am told that whatever it is I'm trying to scrap is a requirement of the European Commission." The author of the manifesto also quotes Mr. Klaus's speech at a conference in Luxembourg in March 2006, where the Czech president said that the bloc's enlargement increased the EU's democratic deficit. President Klaus, who is on a lecture tour in Australia, has strongly condemned the attacks. In an official telegram to the King of Norway, Harald V, President Klaus said such barbaric methods and acts could in no way be justified.
Thank you for that, Jan. You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. And now Jan Wellinger has all the latest sports news.
We begin first with cycling. This year's Tour de France, which was won by Australian rider Cadel Evans, was the worst by far for Czech hopeful Roman Kreuziger, who races for Team Astana. After finishing ninth in the overall standings in 2009 and 2010, and 13th before that, Kreuziger completed this year's race in 112th spot out of a remaining 167 riders. Falls in the first week crippled the racer's chances. In the second, he preserved his strength for strong individual stage finishes, but there too failed to persevere. Team Astana members were originally to help the Kazakhstani team leader Alexander Vinokurov gain a shot for the title. He, however, went out in stage 8 after suffering a crash and nasty femur break. The racer later announced his retirement from cycling. While Kreuziger can't exactly be happy with this year's tour, he told journalists he would learn from the experience. The Tour de France remains one of the most grueling competitions in the world. The 2011 edition saw riders cover 3,430.5 kilometers, ending on the traditional Champs-Élysées in Paris on Sunday. Turning to motorcycle racing, Czech rookie Karel Abraham at the weekend finished just outside of the top 10 at 11th spot in his premiere in the U.S. Grand Prix. Abraham, on his Ducati, started from 13th position and moved up to 10th until the final stages, where he was edged by Japanese rider Hiroshi Aoyama, who beat him by the slimmest of margins. The latest finish leaves Abraham 12th in the overall standings with 46 points. Sunday's race in California was won by Australian MotoGP racer Casey Stoner. In football, the club Jablonec got off to a good start in its preseason preparation at the weekend when it downed second division club Vlašim by a score of 4-1. Lavata scored two in that game. In other preseason matches, top division Česká Budějovice defeated Jihlava B and Hradec Králové won over Bohemians. The 2011-2012 football season begins on July the 30th. In other football news, fellow players from Slavia Prague have nominated midfielder Lukáš Jarolím to be the next team captain, replacing Karol Kysel, who has returned to play in Australia. The club's coach, Michal Petroš, backed Jarolím for the post, expressing confidence he would do well. Slavia have been training in Italy, playing matches against teams like Lazio and Parma. Last season, the club, which was in danger of being relegated to the third division over financial problems, finished 9th overall. In international football news, star goalkeeper Petr Čech has returned from a minor muscle injury and helped his club Chelsea to earn a 4-0 win in Thailand in a preparation match against players from the Thai top division. The Czech goalie only played the match's opening 45 minutes. In the second half, fellow teammate Hilario took over. The Czech national squad will be pleased that Čech is back in action. The Czech team is scheduled to play a friendly against Norway on August the 10th. And that's all the sports news for today.
This week's sports news were brought to you by Jan Wellinger. Thank you for that, Jan. Last week, some 600 Shakespeare scholars came to Prague for the 9th World Shakespeare Congress, an international academic event that has previously been held in such cities as Brisbane, Berlin, or Los Angeles. Among the guests was the Australian scholar Peter Holbrook, a member of the International Shakespeare Association's Congress Committee and author of a book titled Shakespeare's Individualism. I spoke to him about his central thesis, Shakespeare research in different countries, and what his experience at the Congress has been like.
It's been wonderful. The plenary sessions in particular have been fantastic. We've had speakers from all over the world because this is an international Shakespeare Congress. And being in Prague, what a joy. It's just such an extraordinary place.
And does such an international congress, even for a seasoned Shakespeare scholar like yourself, open up new perspectives?
Absolutely. The thing about Shakespeare is that he isn't, this is often said, isn't really anymore, if he ever was, simply an English author. You know, he's an author who's been taken up by so many different lands and peoples and cultures. And this process goes back a long, long way. So one of the things about this conference is that it brings people from all over the world to talk about Shakespeare in their own cultural experience. And so, for example, one of the things that I find in Czech and talking to my Czech colleagues is how different an experience it is to read English literature and Shakespeare in particular in the context of recent political history. I mean, this is a country that has had a lot of suffering under a dictatorial and authoritarian regime, and that's very interesting to me, you know, because Shakespeare has so often been a figure who is associated with freedom, And so studying an author like that under the Soviet era in Czechoslovakia, which I don't know nearly enough about this, but I have got an inkling of what that experience was like, is so very, very different from studying Shakespeare in America or Britain or other countries you could name.
And how would you say, what is the main difference in reception of Shakespeare, say, in Central and Eastern Europe as compared to English-speaking countries?
I'm no expert on that, but one thing that's very clear is that in the, and this came out in Martin Hilsky's wonderful talk for the plenary lecture earlier in the week, and also in his account of the history of the National Theatre in Prague. And what I was absolutely fascinated to find out there was that Shakespeare was central to the mid-19th century, late 18th century, move for national self-determination in the Czech lands. And he tells a wonderful, gave us a wonderful account of the Shakespeare Festival that took place in 1864 in Prague as part of the National Theatre movement, which was really to commemorate the 300th anniversary of Shakespeare's birth. And it's quite clear that love of Shakespeare in this part of the world, strangely enough, combined with love of one's native land. I find that fascinating.
So now a bit about yourself, very straightforward question, but may I ask you when your interest in Shakespeare began or what sparked it?
Most people say, oh, it was, when asked that question, they say it was a school teacher. In my case, I can't say that that was true, and even in my early university years, I can't really recall feeling that Shakespeare was absolutely central. I do remember reading Hamlet, though, at home in my first year of university, being completely bewildered by it. Actually, when I say bewildered, I mean simply not understanding what was going on. And I don't think I returned to Shakespeare for a couple of years, but it was in postgraduate study at Yale University in the United States when I was very, very fortunate to take a Shakespeare class with a very famous scholar, sadly now no longer with us, and that was George K. Hunter. He published as G.K. Hunter. He was a magnificent teacher. He was a slightly fearsome scholar. He couldn't tolerate vagueness or silliness or not doing the work. He used to scare off quite a few students. Somehow or other, I stuck with him, and that changed my life.
And now Shakespeare is certainly a very prolific playwright, poet, author simply. Is there any part of his work that you specialize in or that your research especially focuses on?
I just wrote a book that came out last year called Shakespeare's Individualism. And in that book, I was really interested in the ways in which ideas of liberty and freedom, individuality, authenticity circulate in Shakespeare's works. And the great thing about that topic is that you find that stuff everywhere in Shakespeare. So I wouldn't say that I have a particular bit of Shakespeare that I work on. I'm interested in the whole thing.
I believe your book has been called by some provocative. What do you think prompts people to think that your thesis is provocative?
That's nice of you to have remind me of that, because yes, I'm quite proud of that. Yes, it's provocative because, you know, it takes very seriously, I think, the idea of freedom. Often we talk about freedom in a sort of namby-pamby way, you know, freedom's a nice thing and so on. But when you think about it, freedom so often involves conflicts and problems, and if you're to be free, can I therefore be free? And what am I free to do? Anything at all? Or only certain things? And so on it goes. So if you take the concept of liberty and individuality seriously, then I think you run into moral and political problems and contradictions. And I think that Shakespeare's plays show that. You know, for example, some of the freest characters in Shakespeare, Richard III, for example, or Iago, or Aaron the Moor, a terrible sort of psychopath in the play called Titus Andronicus, not so well known as, say, Hamlet or Othello. These people are very free. They're also really bad. I was interested in that paradox.
and you also teach at the University of Queensland. If you look at your students today and their reactions to Shakespeare or their interest in Shakespeare, do you think that differs at all from your generation of students, or is there any kind of change in how young people today approach Shakespeare?
That's a very good question. It's a very hard question to answer because there's a lot of thinking about this, and I'm not sure who's right. Some people say young people today don't want to or can't read as extensively as people of my generation. Other people, so they say, well, what you've got to do is present material visually and in other media. One can see where they're coming from. My own view, but I can't prove this, is that taught properly, patiently, carefully, young people today can read Shakespeare just as well, if not better, than people in the past. I mean, there's more help now for them to understand hard words and, you know, unfamiliar cultural contexts and whatnot. So I don't think so, really. I think that I'm probably am going to answer that question by saying that I think that young people today can enjoy Shakespeare and understand Shakespeare just as well as their counterparts in earlier times.
And now maybe someone who isn't as well versed in Shakespeare or doesn't really, you know, look at him in a scholarly way would say, well, what else is there new to say about Shakespeare? We've been studying him for so long. Is there new and original research on Shakespeare, and what are some of the more kind of provocative or even groundbreaking academic works on Shakespeare that may have come out in recent years?
That's a great question, and it's true. It's a good question. You know, how can you keep studying the stuff that's been around for so long? You know, I think the answer is that it's not just... It's that we change. We, human beings, we live in particular places, particular times. And what that means is that when we look at the past, we're looking at it from our own moment, you know, and our own interests and our own understandings. So to give you an example, I think that, say, a century ago or even 50 years ago, if you had said that Othello is a play largely about race and it's about the tragedy of racial misunderstanding and of the manipulation by a villain, Iago, of racial stereotypes, you know, convincing Othello that a white woman could never love him because he's a black man. If you had said that the tragedy was a tragedy of race, people would have thought you were a little crazy. I mean, yeah, Othello is a Moor, but really this is a tragedy of love, or, you know, of destiny, or some other category. So I think that that's an example. Now we see that, but of course that's because in the intervening period we've had whole waves of racial liberation movements, of renewed consciousness about cultural and racial difference, and so on and so forth. So we see things in the plays that previous generations could not actually see. They're there, it's just that they couldn't be seen. So I think that's an example. And the list goes on and on of the ways in which contemporary concerns have been brought to bear on the plays and yielded new insights. That process can go too far, of course. We should always keep Shakespeare at the centre. I believe, anyway, that we are trying to understand Shakespeare. But in understanding Shakespeare, we're also learning more about ourselves, and we're bringing our own interests into relationship with that writer.
For the uninitiated reader who may want to pick up a work by Shakespeare but is maybe slightly intimidated, what would be your tips how to start reading Shakespeare?
Okay, well, the first thing that I think you should do is not be scared. Many people have read Shakespeare, so anyone out there who's listening and thinks it's too hard for me, I don't think that's right. Why not just get the text and read it? Don't read the notes. Don't bother with commentary. Just get... They're quite short, you know. You can read a Shakespeare play in an evening, maybe two evenings if you want to take a little bit more time with it. Don't worry about not understanding every word in it. Remember, Shakespeare's original audience included many people who were illiterate or close to illiterate. Therefore, they could not possibly have understood all of the intricacies of his expression and thought. And so that's my first tip. Just get the play and read it from, you know, beginning to end. Don't worry about notes or introductions. And then, possibly, go back and reread it. You'll get much more on the second time. And then start to gradually explore the play with a good guide or text that gives you some help with difficult words. It's not that hard. The other thing that I would recommend is doing it with some other people. It's fun to have a group where you read together and can help each other.
Peter Holbrook is an Australian Shakespeare scholar who was in Prague for the 9th World Shakespeare Congress last week. We are now rounding off our regular weekday program with Sound Czech, our Czech language learning program brought to you this time by Jan Velinga.
Cetto klid říkali epikurejci, život je tanec mezi vejci, život prostě bez vaje.
Welcome to Soundcheck, our Czech language series in which you can learn Czech phrases and idioms through song lyrics. Today the phrase to look out for is Tanec mezi vejci, dancing among eggs, in a song of the same name by famous Czech folk singer Jaromír Nohavica. Dancing among eggs, as you'd probably guess, implies difficult balance, and in Nohavica's song the phrase is used as a metaphor for life. He sings, in fact, Život je tanec mezi vejci. Life is a dance among eggs. In other words, difficult. In English, you might say life is sometimes a high trapeze act. In the song, Nohavica refers indirectly, it appears, to political events of last year, in which youthful protesters took to throwing eggs at political meetings of the Social Democratic Party, a movement that caught like wildfire through Facebook, but eventually got very ugly. Certainly there is at least one clip on the internet which refers to those events directly. And who better than politicians to perform delicate balancing acts? Sometimes, though, things get out of hand. They get splattered by eggs thrown by protesters. Literally. Metaphorically, dancing among eggs, though, is often something even the rest of us have to do, from balancing work and our private life to who knows what else. Nohavica suggests we might as well accept it, singing Chce to klid. Calm is needed, and Život prostě bez vaje. Life is great. A kind of Czech, don't worry, be happy. As long as there are enough eggs to be had, the singer adds.
Chce to klid, říkali epikurejci, život je tanec mezi vejci, život prostě bez vaje. Hoši byl by, kdyby byl bez vajec, bez vaje.
What dancing among eggs isn't, at least not exactly, is the Czech equivalent of the English expression to walk on eggshells, when you have to tread carefully in order not to upset or offend someone, although in the case of Czech politicians it's arguably not that far removed. The eggs in Czech probably represent more general obstacles, and sometimes things come to a head and events get particularly precarious. In such cases, it is recommended to postupovat opatrně, to take steps carefully, not to make a mistake. On the other hand, it might be worthwhile to recall the English saying, you can't make an omelette without breaking a few eggs, a phrase which means it is difficult to achieve something important without causing any unpleasant effects. In Czech, the phrase has nothing to do with eggs at all, but trees. The Czechs say, Když se kácí les, létají třísky. When you fell a forest, the splinters fly.
Chce to klid, říkali epikurejci, život je tanec mezi vejci, život prostě bez vaje. Hoší byl by, kdyby byl bez vajec, bez vajec, bez vajec, bez vajec, bez vajec.
Jan Velinger with Soundcheck there, wrapping up Radio Prague's English show for today. We'll talk to you again tomorrow, but until then, from me, Sarah Barufka, and from all of us here at Radio Prague, thank you so much for listening, and goodbye.